There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along on this Monday. Remember the phone number. Well, if you don't, I'll give it to you again. 343-0106. Works for a text and a phone call. And with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can always send us one of those talkback messages. The FM Talk 106.5 app is waiting for you over at Google Play for Android users or iOS users at the App Store. Just look for FMTALK 1065. That's the app and get it. It does a bunch of other stuff. It's like a Leatherman for your phone. It has lots of different things it does, but one of them lets you send us a message back by using that microphone icon right there on the front page. A couple things before we get to our guest. Just saw some notes from over the weekend. The Tyson fight went like I thought it would. Not like I wanted it to, but like I thought it would. It was interesting, too, to watch it on Netflix and thought, well, because I use Starlink. I live out in the country. I use Starlink, and I was like, ah, well, yeah, something going on with Starlink. Seems like it wasn't just me with the buffering, so if they're going to be carrying football on there, it's going to be an issue out there. But, you know, after rebooting about three times, got to watch that fight, and it was pretty good out there. Plus, we'll get to later on in the hour, talk about the news story that ran this morning. I'll point this out. As Executive Director of Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland, my buddy back in studio, good to see you.
Yeah, happy to be here, always.
I was going to just say, the snapper story earlier, I think, has been worked out. I saw it hit late last week, and here's what happens. I'm open to this. I've been talking about this for 20-something-odd years. I could be a consultant to your news group if you need a consultant on critters, seasons, those kind of things, news groups. Before you run a story, just call me and run it by me. And they said snapper season's reopening for the second half, and there were a bunch of people going, Sean, what happened? It's been open for recreational. This is for charter boats. So this is for hire charter boats. It opens back up. So I know that got some confusion this morning. So I'm just trying to answer. I'm going through these things, William, the things that stacked up as I came in here. All right. Got to get updates from you aplenty here. I was thinking about, I was down on the causeway fishing, my boy and I, on Saturday morning. And thinking about where we stand on dredge spoil and where it's going to go after the completion here next year. What do y'all know at Baykeeper?
Yeah, so I wish I had more of an update than I currently have. But what I can tell you is that the community has made its voice heard strongly. There's been about 5,000 letters written to our federal elected officials.
And that's a lot for anything.
That's setting records for Baykeeper issues. And so it's evident to me that the community says, hey, we don't want you putting this dredge spoil here in Mobile Bay. Many more letters written to the Army Corps and things like that. Where it stands right now is we are now in the period where we are able to file a lawsuit, but we're continuing to try to pursue some sort of agreement outside of that. I'm hopeful, but you know, I'm waiting to hear back. I'm in that hurry up and wait game.
And you would hear back, it would be the decision of the Corps to say what?
Well, there's a few different things that could happen. So, I mean, the easiest one is they could voluntarily say, hey, we're going to in this practice for now.
And I guess, you know what, I should go back a second. People hadn't heard us talk about this before. The process is, Mobile Baykeeper is not against the dredging of the ship channel or the widening.
No, sir.
Super important for us here in Mobile. What's that issue here?
Yeah, so the issue is not whether or not we deepen or widen the ship channel, but rather what do we do with the dredge spoil? And it's not just about the new construction, right? So that new construction, they're using some of it for beneficial use, restoration mm-hmm. purposes. You may see it on the Dolphin Island Causeway. And I know there's mixed feelings about that project as well.
I think I love that project.
You know, in the end, it's going to be a great project. There's some folks that have some oyster farms and folks that are doing mm-hmm. wild oysters that are concerned about the silt,
which is right there at Cedar Point.
That's exactly right. But that's again not the issue that we are raising. It's the maintenance of the channel. So over the next 20 years, the Army Corps plans to put about 90 million cubic yards of dirt into Mobile Bay in what a practice called open water thin layer placement. And what that is going to do is it's going to increase turbidity in Mobile Bay. It's going to bury some of those creatures that that other creatures feed on. And then I think it's important also to note it, from a fishery standpoint, there's lots of species that don't want to be in that cloud of dredge. So it's not just that they're affected, their habitat's affected, but rather they don't swim there. And we do see behavior patterns change. I was just talking to the flounder man here recently and saying, hey, we're not seeing flounder here in this area. And then sure enough, that's where they were putting the dredge at that time.
So the idea is they're dredging it out, and instead of taking it somewhere else on land,
offshore, or do some sort of restoration project. Those are the.
But what they're doing is putting it. You're taking that silt from here in the channel,
yes, sir,
and putting it somewhere else in Mobile Bay.
Yeah, putting it pretty much right next to the channel, all up and down. They do rotate, and they're putting it out there. And what they say is about 12 inches at deepest, where they're rotating up and down the channel there.
You know, you talk about the turbidity is one thing.
And turbidity, just by the way, is your clarity, right? So,
right.
So more turbid water is, that means the less clear it is.
Like if you got coffee, let's say you have a thin coffee, and then you put milk in it, you know, or cream in it. That's
just created some turbidity.
Yeah, turbidity in the coffee, can't see as far through it. The idea of the silt in the water and the suspended turbidity is one thing. I know I've talked with personally friends of mine that fish. I don't know how y'all say employed, by the way. These are people that are not commercial or full-time fishermen. Y'all got great bosses that fish all the time, and they're showing me tracks that they're running that just in this year, the amount of siltation, and these are causeway rats. They understand winds and tides, and, you know, this place that might be deep enough today is not deep enough tomorrow, but they have similar conditions, and the actual elevation of that has increased very quickly. In other words, there's more deposit in a spot.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the Corps is claiming that both it's not going to affect the bottom dwellers because it's going to erode, and also at the same time saying you don't have to worry about turbidity because it's not going to erode. So I don't see how you can have both. Again, we're in those conversations with the Corps to try to get a voluntary agreement. And then, of course, we're working towards trying to get either some sort of legislation or some sort of settlement agreement where we can get things in writing, because this practice was banned in Mobile Bay from 1986 until 2012.
Okay, so there is precedent, and then something happened. What happened?
2012, there was a lot of storms, and that brought in a lot more sediment, dredge material into the channel. So as they maintained it, it was not cost effective to take that stuff offshore like they had been doing. And so they got emergency permission to begin this practice again. And that emergency continues to this day.
So when it was implemented, it was, you say emergency action. To me, that means it's something that's temporary.
That's correct. They did go back and get a permit. So to say, like, once we started it, then we went back and got a permit. Again, not much fanfare around that permit. I don't believe Baykeeper worked on that issue at the time. And I'm not sure of many that knew what was going on when that permit was issued.
You know, we think about the bay and the, I've talked about this. The old timers told me what it used to look like,
yes,
in different
sir.
Places. What it's supposed to be in the baseline, you know, where do we go back to? Do we go back to, you know, pre-Columbian, or do we go back to 1950? But there has to be some baseline we're trying to achieve.
That's right. So that's a great question. And so, first of all, I'm not aware of a baseline that anybody is trying to achieve, something that's black and white. That is something we're putting a lot of resources to at Baykeeper right now. But what we're saying is when our seagrasses and oyster reefs recover, and so we're going to give a scientific reasoning as to what that means for us and how we plan to achieve it.
Yeah, that's going to be But if you said not filing a lawsuit, but let's say tomorrow,
yes,
okay, I'm waving the wand, and the Corps says, okay, well, we're going to keep deepening and widening the channel. You're good with that. And we're going to take this dredge spoil, and I'm going to give you two. We're going to take it offshore. We're not even going to beneficial use on land. We're going to take it offshore to, the beneficial use zone that they use at the south end down there,
yeah,
offshore. Are you good?
Absolutely. I mean, there are some other things that we've requested when we initially sent notice here, but most of those have been taken care of. The only thing that I draw people's attention to, as I've heard from the community, we've asked for a study on ship wake and what's that doing to our shorelines. That is in process of happening, but that's not an issue that we expect to get to finish.
It's not it's not tied directly to,
it's not tied to the dredge material per se, but it's definitely tied to the ship channel.
Also, if they say, okay, we're going to put all the spoil up on the land that exists now, somewhere different projects, you're good.
Absolutely.
Okay, third one. I told you two, I lied. Third one, we're going to build a another Go-Yard Island. We're going to build some kind of island to put dredge spoil, you know, like Go-Yard.
I'm going to say I'm good with the caveat of a lot of these projects, we call them beneficial use. There's a lot of work that goes into that. So we can't wave the magic wand. I know that's our scenario here, but getting those details right is what matters. As we mentioned before, there's a great project going on in the Dauphin Island Causeway. I would have loved to see some more containment there happen. You know, those oystermen work really, really hard. Anytime those reefs get silted in, we lose oysters, and then they lose income, number one, and we lose habitat. If we're ever going to restore oysters in Mobile Bay, we've got to keep that silt off of them.
But isn't short-term, long-term? I see what you're saying. Listen, there are two guys that are oystermen that listen to the show, send me pictures, communicate with me, so I see what they go through. But won't that area with that marsh restoration down there be better going forward? Maybe acutely. Yeah, it's a problem right now, but chronically, long-term, won't it be better?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. So, but there are things you can do to mitigate the short-term.
Is it like an in-water silt fence or something?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just one example. There's lots of different options for keeping silt contained, and often, I mean, always it's cheaper to do the less. So what we need to advocate for as a community is to get more money in order to do to keep more silt on site when we're doing these kind of projects.
Okay, we're coming right back. Executive Director of Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland, our guest, and we'll get some questions asked from the text line next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right at 12:21, FM Talk 106.5, and back to our conversation with Executive Director at Mobile Baykeeper, William Strickland, which we had, by the way, too. Maybe we'll have a side conversation. So you probably one of these very cool Mobile Baykeeper ball caps, and it's got a flat bill. And you and I had a discussion that I would have to put a little bend in it. And you're a little younger than me.
I'll put a little bend in it, though. Just a little. Less than you.
Okay, right. So we're going to work on this, I think, William and I, a graph that shows your age, guys, by how much bend you put in the hat. If you go back to my grandfather's time, probably yours, flat bills were the thing because they just took the hat and put it on their head.
They placed it gently on the top of their head.
Very gently.
With the mesh back showing the gap between their hair and the sky there.
So. Yeah, we're probably related to the same people.
Yeah, that's right.
But then as time went on, there was a bend, and now it's gone flat again.
It's gone the other way. And so I wish I had the confidence to wear it flat. But
I
let my younger folks wear that flat bill around.
Yeah, 52, I cannot do that. All right, to the text line here, Adam asking, from what agency does the Corps get its permits?
Great question, and this is part of the issue we have, is the Corps of Engineers gets permits from itself. There are other agencies that are involved in the process, but those that are in charge of approving and issuing the permit is the Corps of Engineers. By the way, they're also in charge of enforcing whatever the permit says. So you've got enforcement, permitting, all happening in-house. Yes, there's other agencies consulted, but that's how it goes.
Do they have like an office down the hallway and they talk?
Yes, they do. And, you know, there's divisions between who does what. So I don't want to overstate it. But, I mean, you know how it goes. You have divisions, but we're all under the same roof. And the Corps is a unique federal agency in that way. A lot of power exists.
Right. This texture asking, can any of the dredging aggregate they're getting be used in concrete for the new bridge?
So, yes, dredge aggregate can be used for concrete. In fact, they're using some of it to do some wave breaks there on the western shore. At least that's in the idea phase. And I'll add to that, coal ash also makes excellent concrete aggregate.
What's about to go? Could it be this? I think last time you were here, I said, hey, just from a marketer's aspect, what a great story that we've got this project that we need to do, but we got these two environmental issues here. Could you put the dredging along with the coal ash together to build the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project?
Hey, if you are are you a contractor in that business, mobilebaykeeper.org, send me an email. Absolutely. Be amazing. Let's use dredge material. Let's use coal ash, and let's take these messes that we've made and build something constructive out of it.
It'd be something. I mean, just, you know, I'm thinking like branding.
Hey, I'm about it, man.
It'd be good stuff. This texter here, unnamed texter. How does Dolphin Island figure into this? I thought the offshore dumping of the sediment / fill offshore was what was hindering the renourishment of Dolphin Island. Has Dolphin Island recovered some of the lost land they've been dumping back in the bay since 2012?
Yeah, so get ready for some complexity on this. And so my understanding is that, first of all, you take some dredge material way offshore, and that doesn't affect Dolphin Island. It's dumped out into the Gulf, but rather for a long time, they were taking it out there and weren't putting it in a place where it could wash back onto Dolphin Island. And so now they are placing a lot of dredge material in a spot just to the east of Dolphin Island where the natural tides can take it out and rebuild those beaches there. Now, I do know that our friends on Dolphin Island would like even more dredge material. Not all of it qualifies, to be clear. So it's got to be pretty sandy if it's going to be used for that.
And that's worth talking about, too. As you go in the scope from, you know, inside the Mobile River to the lighthouse, it's different. The silt versus sand, you have mixes.
One of the beautiful things about our system, you know, I went fishing last week. We caught 7 different species of fish, and it wasn't even a thing. Nobody was talking about it because it's just what you do, right? So we have this system where you've got a really marshy, pretty gnarly stuff, organic, smelly material up in the river, and then you come down out and near Dolphin Island, and it's all sandy, clean material. So yeah, it does vary tremendously, and what we do with it can vary tremendously. So you can view it as a bug, or you can view it as an asset where you can do marsh rebuilding and do some other great things with that organic material.
Because that needs to be up there while I look at, you know, and Dolphin Island has its marshes too, and has soft and stinky mud as well on the north side. But I always looked at the channel, and I know they do it at other channels, and I know this is kind of off subject, but if they would just hopscotch it. In other words, let's dredge it here. Here comes, you know, everything's flowing east to west in the Gulf, that pattern, the reason our barrier islands are like they are. Pick it up here, dredge it out of the channel, and then just blonk. That's a technical term. Blonk, put it on the other side and let it keep on going.
Blonk has not come up in our meetings yet. But, you know, I think what you're highlighting is the need to get creative. And so one thing that we haven't mentioned yet is putting together a pipeline of here are the projects we need done. We know there's tons of marshes that are drowning right now. We know the way we've channelized things in other coastal rivers and things like that. We need dredge material or other material to do restoration projects. So let's detail all those out and let's begin really putting our foot on the gas on how we make these plans. Yes, it takes a long amount of time. It takes a lot of work to get those projects lined up. But right now, we don't have a pipeline full. When we say, let's use it beneficially, the Corps says, well, we don't have enough projects to do that.
No, it'd be good to have this all connected because for efficiency. It's something I looked at on the Dolphin Island thing I've been talking about for years, that why don't we just let that sand go over versus a situation after a storm, God forbid.
Yes, sir.
And then we have to pay to bring sand in. So we're paying to dredge, but we're now paying to bring sand in. How about we just pay one bill and take the sand there?
That's right. And you know, some of you may be scratching your head. We're presenting these win-win scenarios. What's the fight about? And so I actually agree and sometimes scratch my head, but I do want you to know that it's really important that you let your elected officials, that you let those that are there to serve you know how you feel about the issue. Certainly, we have PhDs working on this that are expressing their concerns, but we have to remind those in public office that they work for you. It's not the other way around.
And it's not, the way I look at it on the outside, it's not a binary. It's not a 0 or 1. There's a way to have a widened and deepened ship channel business for our port at the same time benefit the environment.
Just look at
Savannah. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Savannah, all the ports in the Chesapeake. You can look to Tampa Bay is always a great example. I like to point to places where we have successful ports and we have done lots of restoration. It's not just that they've preserved what's there, but Tampa went from, I believe it was 20% of their original seagrass beds up to over 100% in a matter of like 20 years. And
really?
A big part of that was taking dredge material offshore. Another part of it was reducing their nutrient input. But what happened was everybody bought in. Everybody decided to put the long-term interest of the community, the long-term interest of the economy above the short-term. And that's what we need to see here. And it's only going to happen if we make our voice heard and tell them, hey, this is what we want.
All right. People want to get in touch. I know you gave your email a second ago, but people want to get involved with this, get updates. Where do they go?
Yeah, so go to SaveMobileBay.com if you would like to get updates on the dredge issue. It does take you to our website, but MobileBayKeeper.org is always a good place to visit to check out what else is going on.
Always good to see you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, we'll talk hats and maybe NIL next time.
NIL, yeah, that's a sticky subject. Yeah. I'm down.
Okay, good.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Checking in with our buddy Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal in just a second. First up, Anna at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, Anna.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually realizing, too, even for me, it's Christmas shopping season for a lot of folks out there. What's going on, like, gift ideas at the store?
Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely. I'm just processing new jewelry that we got in, and a lot of it is estate pieces that's going out. Some of it is silver. Some is gold. There's a new diamond. Looks like a really nice engagement set. That's going out in the case today. So I'm just, you know, processing all of this. Every day there's new stuff coming in that gets clean, polished up, and put in the case.
Right. Yeah, original pieces. I mean, y'all, truly, this is nothing you're going to see anywhere else. One of a kind is what exists at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Also, if people are thinking about those silver rounds and engraving, time to get that done?
Yes, sir. We have Christmas engravables with Santa theme, snowman, you know, just about everything you can think of. I think there's some even with like bunny Christmas carols, bunny singing Christmas carols.
Good stuff. Well, tell folks how to find you.
Yes, sir. We're at 2204 Government Street, Midtown Mobile, just a block west of Little Flower Catholic School and Church.
Hey, thanks, Anna.
Bye-bye.
Right, Anna checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Check in now with our man Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, Capital Journal. Anything else you want to add to the list?
No, not at present.
Well, no, you could also you could add in you know, if people are like a super nerd and want to get the monthly update here, you got that too, Inside Alabama Politics.
Of course, yeah, Inside Alabama Politics. That's for our paid subscribers, our ADN insiders. And of course, we also have a podcast. Probably going to put out an episode today, In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. So, yeah, all right, fair enough. Lots of irons in the fire.
Hey, and speaking of Inside Alabama Politics, I know you got to keep some of it secret, so people like me keep paying for it. But pretty Mobile.
That's pretty much all out there anyway.
It's pretty Mobile. Yeah, some people actually will go and steal it and act like it's their stuff. But that's a conversation for another day, right?
No, well, a lot of it's being talked about anyway. What were you
the mayoral thing here in Mobile? You know, y'all had written about this in IAP as well. Like, people say, this is a municipal election. What are you doing talking about this in 2024 for something that's August of 2025? I believe the players here are going to get in early because there's a lot of fundraising going to have to happen. So I think this is going to be not something that comes up this spring. I think it's going to be happening now.
Oh, absolutely. And look, this came from a conversation. You know, we asked people, we're going to report on Inside Alabama Politics, tell us what's happening. And so this came from Mobile from some readers and insiders that were saying, hey, you need to be looking forward to this election. Obviously, Mayor Stimson's been in office so long. This is a huge open seat. So absolutely, it's a statewide issue. If it was the same thing in Birmingham or Huntsville or Montgomery, it'd be the same thing. It's a big, big deal, especially considering, you know, the legacy Stimson brings and the unique coalition that he put together, right? That's the challenge that I see. And just from afar is that he was successful at putting together a winning coalition. Can others do that? And that, to me, is the big challenge.
Yeah, yes. And before that, even, I look at the fundraising side, right? And I don't know how many lanes. We always talk about lanes in politics. I don't know how many lanes we have in the municipal side, but I'd say several. I imagine the first person to announce, get public, and start asking for checks is going to benefit because there'll be somebody behind them that's asking the same people, right? I mean, there's certain lanes for fundraising.
There is a virtue sometimes in getting in early, or at least even if it's not public, you know, a formal announcement, the folks that, you know, they know you're running. And so it helps to kind of clear the field. Like, take a Jerry Carl. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he put forth his name, if he really wanted the job, then I think that would clear out quite a few people, you know, with similar voting profiles, right? Similar appeals to, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that voting population is. And so, yeah, he would benefit from that just because he wouldn't have to compete with it. But I do think you're going to have multiple people in the race. I mean, who knows how many at the end of the day. We just wanted to put together a list of here's who might do it and give a picture of that racial breakdown.
Y'all can check that out when you sign up for IAP. Now, the email this morning, one of the, feel like, hey, I'm third rail. Let's talk about the new State House. So people, yeah. I get ready for the text line to blow up with people like, I can't believe. So where are we, the new State House? I mean, have they broken ground? When does this happen?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, they are right now, they're working on the fourth floor. So they're mm-hmm. already up to the fourth floor, really kind of putting that floor together. And so it has gone very quickly. What we reported today was that they're on time. And people, you got to remember, this is a pretty unique building in that it's not a regular office building. There's plenty of that, right? But even after primary construction is done, there's so much work that has to go into the legislative chambers, the committee rooms, all the electronics that make that work, all the video equipment that makes that work. So you'll see a completed exterior really maybe by this time next year. But it'll take a year or more to actually move in and get everything ready. So you're looking at operationally, the 2027 legislative session will be hosted in the new State House.
Okay. Who, remember us talking about, so RSA owns it and the state pays, how does this work?
Yeah, so RSA is building it and they will, the state will essentially lease it from RSA until a date certain when they buy it all, almost like a lease to own kind of situation. That was what everybody found agreeable, low interest rates, you know, that kind of thing. But I think eventually, who knows how long it'll take, but maybe it'll be a couple of years, maybe it'll be 10 years, but the state will eventually, or the legislature will eventually own the building.
Okay, so it won't be some property that is just a forever rent.
Right. That was
they talked about it at one point. Remember that it was going to be like they just cut a check to RSA or something like that, like a
right.
Check?
Yeah, but they've had to go in stages, and so this is a situation where RSA builds it to their very nice, you know, standards. Probably a lot nicer standards than a normal state building, right? We know Bronner likes to do it, mm-hmm. right? Which you want. You want this to be.
Yeah, I do actually agree.
You know, a pristine, space. And so the state legislature will lease it until such a time as they've paid off the entire note, I suppose. And so I don't know how long that'll take, but eventually the legislature will own it. But look, we're really excited. I encourage people to go look at the pictures of the new State House. We put some updated, you know, we have some renderings from a long time ago, but now we're starting to get the interior of the Senate, the interior of the House, these committee rooms. That's one of the biggest reasons that they wanted to build this new State House is right now there's only one room in the State House really where if you're a member of the public you're going to be able to see what's going on. Same thing with video and stuff like that. It's been needed for a really long time. I know it's not politically popular, but it's yeah. one of those things that if they don't do it now, that they're going to be in a world of hurt later when they've got to just pretty much replace all of the equipment and air conditioning and air, you know, in the current state house, it's all falling apart.
Just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. Of course, the podcast, that TV show, you know, Capital Journal, that you can catch right now on YouTube. I want to ask you this, something we've talked about for the last couple months here, and you had it in the email this morning. What's next with the Department of Veterans Affairs? So what's the update here going forward without Admiral Davis at the head? Kind of lay this out.
Yeah, well, ever since this really regrettable public fight, you know, that took place, like I said, over the last several months, there's been talk in the legislature about the need to basically start over with Veterans Affairs and rework the governance and organization of the department so it functions like a normal modern department would. And remember, the governor, this is not a cabinet agency. I'm not really sure why that was ever the case. To go back to the foundation of it, but it's not, and that's a problem. It means it operates kind of outside of the normal workings, which I think you can attribute some of the miscommunication to in this public row. So the lawmakers are talking about reforming it, making it more of a normal cabinet agency. I mean, I started hearing this as early as late August and early September from people like the speaker and the lawmakers in charge of the Veterans Affairs committees, that they had already had these kind of opinions that they weren't necessarily working very well with the department for various reasons, and that maybe some kind of overhaul was necessary. But I definitely think you're going to see one now, and I think you're going to see it pretty early in the legislative session.
It'll be interesting because, I mean, I think there's going to be some heat turned up by what has happened over the last, you know, more than a few months here with Admiral Davis's removal, right? That those members of the legislature are going to be asking or answering to constituents about that at the same time, talk about what's going on going forward.
Well, especially in probably most limited to your area of the state. That's for what it's really been, you know, turned up.
It's always us down here, Todd. It's always us. Uh-huh. It's always us.
Well, I think there's obvious reasons for that in terms of the board members and folks getting more upset than in other places around the state. But I wrote about this in Inside Alabama Politics. What's interesting about all of this, because, you know, Admiral Davis, you know, post-removal has done quite a bit of media. I know y'all spoke. He's mm-hmm. done a lot of TV interviews. He's done other types of interviews. So he's done kind of this media blitz and gotten some headway with it in terms of getting articles. What I haven't seen change at all is the legislature's opinion of what happened and their commitment to, you know, changing this. That's really interesting to me, because if there was this groundswell truly statewide amongst veterans, you would see it reflected in the legislature. It's just not there. There was frustration about the top job in the VA for a while. I'm not saying it's all on him, but functionally, this has not been a terrific organization. They got way outside their lane on this healthcare stuff. And I think you're going to see a pretty unanimous, if not close to unanimous, push to reform the Veterans Affairs Department. And really, again, the whole point is to make it more responsive and more available to veterans and getting back to the core mission of what the state VA does versus the federal VA, and not necessarily crossing those lines.
You know, just looking at it, though, something's got to change. I believe in my conversations that post-2017 changes to the positive were being made. In that, you know, some of the stats, and this is not even about the personalities involved, it's just the stats of where we were in 2017, and the legislature cuts the scholarship funds for families. We had the number of facilities cut out there. You know, it seems like at a time we should have been expanding, we were cutting, right? So that's not who's at the helm. That's just a question I have as an Alabamian. What are we doing for our veterans, and why aren't we doing it better?
Absolutely. It's about time they explored a lot of that. I think you're going to hear a lot of that conversation. It's unfortunate that it took this situation to, you know, reveal a lot of that, but I think it has, and I think you're going to see, like I said, pretty early in the next session, legislation to figure out how the Department of Veterans Affairs is going to operate going forward.
You know, I'm famous for this, whether it be medical marijuana, gambling, this. Can we find another state that's doing something and doing it well and just copy off their paper? You know, I mean,
that'd be good.
You know, I mean, think about these things that are causing us problems in Alabama. A beauty of the laboratory of the states, right, in our republic. Let's find some other state that's kicking butt, doing it, and going, hey, can we just, let's just do what they're doing.
I would be all for that. I really doubt you've seen similar skirmishes in other states. And so if there's a pretty clear chain of command, those things don't happen.
Yeah, and it could, I mean, I think this could have gone, you know, of course, we're well down the road on the medical marijuana thing, but I think I have been proven somewhat right early on when I said, hey, why don't we just find the states that are doing this and having success with it and do that.
On that issue, Sean, you're right, and I hear different things. From some folks, I hear that, look, lawsuits have been, you know, dragging states back. Almost every state that's instituted medical marijuana, there have been lawsuits. I'm sure that's true. I cannot imagine it's been 2 years, almost 2.5 years after the passage of the law. I was being asked about this last weekend from somebody from Florida who, you know, they're pretty much recreational. They got a lot of leeway. And he's like, you know, why don't y'all have medical marijuana? I said, well, it's been passed. It just hasn't been implemented. Not a single patient has gotten a gummy or oil or whatever
the tincture. Yeah, I mean, think about that. As much as Senator Melson, you know, I know he's on with you, but he was on with me back then making this case. And, you know, I was like, I hear what you're saying. This is real stuff. We're going to help these people in Alabama. I really got behind that bill. And then the spirit goes into the letter of the law and it becomes this Byzantine thing. And like you said, here we are a couple of years later and people that were expecting something, right, have got nothing.
Yeah, it's a real shame. And you can't blame the legislature completely. And you can't blame the lawyers completely. The fact is there was a problem from the very beginning as the commission got going on essentially grading these applications, right? Applications for licenses. They have corrected it. They've done a lot of hard work to get back to where it's supposed to be. But that initial mistake at the very beginning was just like, you know, the princess and the pea. Once there's a foundational problem, it impacts everything above it, including trust in the system. And so don't be surprised if the legislature also opens up this law, because they're extremely frustrated that something they passed 2.5 years ago has still not been, it's not available to those who need it. And that there's a lot of frustration amongst lawmakers right now.
Absolutely. And citizens as well. Todd, people want to get the email. How do they get signed up?
It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. You can sign up right there on the homepage. Enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list.
If we want to watch you on the TV, how do we do that for Capital Journal?
Absolutely. Capital Journal airs Friday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at noon on Alabama Public Television. But the easiest way may be just to find us on YouTube. Search for Capital Journal and subscribe there so you never miss an episode.
All right, Todd. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, Sean, be good.
All right, there goes Todd Stacey, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:55, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Segment show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. My buddy Trey has been doing this 16-plus years. And maybe it's a good time right now. Holidays coming up to get some of that junk gone. Maybe it's a guest room. Maybe it's a garage. Maybe it's the back port. Wherever. You got the junk. You need it gone. You need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And, he's ready to work for you this week. You get an appointment as early probably as today or tomorrow if you need it, or if you want to schedule it so it works for your schedule later in the week, he's got you there as well. Also, big things that they remove. Just like sometimes people get this idea, okay, things inside my house. But with great routine, above ground pools, backyard storage buildings, swing sets, trampolines, those kind of things, they can haul those off as well. So you need the junk gone. Get Trey and the crew from 1-800-GOT-JUNK to do it. I've used them personally, used them with this radio station. Several of us have here. And if you go online and look at the hundreds of Google reviews from people you know that say, you know, it says something. They go online to say how much they liked a service. It tells you everything you need to know. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Make that appointment today. All right. Houndstooth says, yeah, tell Todd Stacy we know we care about veterans down in Mobile more than the rest of the state. So what's wrong with the rest of the state? You know, Houndstooth, you hear me talk about that in some of my interviews. And you know what? I've got one coming up here in just a little bit. With a veteran and my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. is going to join me. It is interesting. It's like these things we grow up. You grow up here and you just think, well, the rest of the state's like this. And it really showed up in this debate of the removal of Admiral Davis. I've talked to, you know, on air and off air, like, hey, are the is the, you know, the equivalency of the South Alabama Veterans Commission, you know, the one from North Alabama or West Central or East Central, or are they there? And they're like, no, they really aren't. And it's wild to think that there's not a robust, because, I mean, the state of Alabama, we're talking about 380,000 veterans, about 73,000 down here in our neck of the woods, that there's not an equivalent group and support, Houndstooth, in other parts of the state. I'm with you. But I've learned that here is... the conversations have gone on. You know, you think, I don't know, you think the Huntsville area? You're telling me they don't have it? So, all right, coming back, yeah, we'll have that discussion and more as we continue Veterans Month right here on FM Talk 106.5.